Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from General Assembly Austin. GA works to transform careers through leading-edge training in coding, data, marketing, design, and more. Discover how GA can boost your hireability and productivity at ga.co/NPR.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to 1A. More than 40 million Americans speak Spanish. Millions more are learning. But for all of you, I would recommend NPR's Radio Ambulante. It is the podcast to hear incredible stories from all across the U.S. and the Latin diaspora. It's hosted by novelist Daniel Alarcón. Radio Ambulante covers the region like no one else does. Reporting and storytelling en español. You'll find Radio Ambulante on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Google Cloud Platform. If you're looking to move the cloud, Google Cloud Platform provides security that scales with your business and keeps your data safe no matter how fast you grow. Built on more than 15 years of experience focused on keeping customers safe on Google applications like Gmail, Search, and other apps. With Google Cloud Platform, your applications and data take advantage of the same security model. To learn more about Google Cloud Platform, visit cloud.google.com.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Paul Manafort served as Donald Trump's campaign manager for about 5 months last year. He resigned after reports that he may have received nearly $13 million in off-the-books cash from a pro-Russia political party in Ukraine. But things have not quieted down for him since then. FBI agents picked his locks in a pre-dawn raid. There are reports of wiretapping and surveillance going back years, and stories of shady deals with Russian billionaires and of future counseling Iraqi Kurds. Mr. Manafort himself may have put it best when he spoke to NBC's Chuck Todd last year.
This is the ultimate reality show. It's the presidency of the United States.
And Mr. Manafort may have found himself a starring role. Today we'll try to answer the question of who he is and where things go from here. Joining us in studio to help us discuss it is Mark Mazzetti, the New York Times' Washington Investigations editor. He leads a team of reporters tasked with looking into all parts of the government and Washington. Mark, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jan Behren, in charge of the election law group at Wiley Rhine LLP and a former general counsel for the Republican National Committee. Jan, welcome.
Nice to be here.
Joining us on the line from the Brookings Institution is one of its fellows, Susan Hennessy. She's a fellow in national security and governance studies. She's also a former attorney with the National Security Agency and the managing editor of the blog Lawfare. Susan, glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Mark Mazzetti, let's start with you. There have been a number of stories dropping this week about Paul Manafort, one from CNN, one from the Washington Post. The New York Times broke a few stories, including one late last night. Can you kind of give us the latest that we've been hearing about Paul Manafort?
Well, I suppose the latest is a story we did last night. A colleague of mine, Ken Vogel, and also Joe Becker, did a story about what is Manafort up to right now. And right now, he is working for the Kurdish government on behalf of the Kurdish government in advance of a referendum that is coming up where the Kurds are trying to get independence. And this is sort of the type of work that Paul Manafort has done for decades. He's worked for foreign governments to advance their interests. Sometimes those interests are aligned with the United States. Sometimes they're not. But Manafort's firm have a deal with the Kurds to sort of advocate for Kurdish independence, which is very important both politically and financially for the Kurds.
To basically carve themselves out from the government of Iraq.
Right. And so this comes kind of amid a flurry of stories this week about Manafort. We did a story on Monday that sort of was really focused on the tactics of Robert Mueller and his team, the special counsel, and how they're being very aggressive. And the sort of way the story began was on the Manafort raid over the summer where FBI agents picked his lock. They found him in bed in the morning and copied his computer files, took pictures of his expensive suits. Sort of this was real hardball tactics indicating that the feds are really strongly interested in Manafort. And then there's been a succession of stories since.
Susan Hennessy, there have been a lot of stories about Paul Manafort lately. They all can kind of, I think if you're not a Washington watcher or insider, they can blur together very quickly. For someone who's watching this legal process, give us a framework for some of the legal implications we should be paying attention for. How should the average person be making sense of all this? What should we be looking for? What should we be bearing in mind?
All right. So I think the thing to sort of keep in mind right now is, you know, where there are actual answers and where there are open questions. So one of the most significant things that recent New York Times report regarding sort of this, early morning raid and sort of the scene piece of what's been going on with Mueller's investigation into Manafort is a line that notes that Manafort has been informed he is going to be indicted. Now, from a legal standpoint, that might mean that he's received what's known as a target letter. That means that that's an official communication from the government that he is going to be indicted. That might tell us something sort of about the imminence of the timeline, you know, that Mueller really is thinking about doing this, you know, sort of in the immediate future, proceeding towards indictment. It's also possible that kind of language is just that the prosecutors have sort of casually told him that or told him that for the purpose of sort of mounting pressure. So as people are sort of trying to parse through the various threads of this very, very complex investigation, you know, it's important not to sort of get ahead of things and to note those places in which we still don't quite have answers and in which, you know, it still might be some time before there's a legal process that's actually visible to the public.
Jan Behrend, let's talk a little bit about Paul Manafort's political work. Give us a sense of what his reputation has been like, what the kind of work has been like in the days pre-Donald Trump. How do Washington insiders know Paul Manafort?
Well, Paul Manafort's history here in Washington goes back to the 1970s. He is a very young man. I think he was still in law school, for example. He was working on the campaign for President Ford. He subsequently worked in the Reagan campaign in 1980. And he was one of a group of young professionals who really were trailblazers here in Washington in the field of political consulting and lobbying. Paul Manafort became one of the first to be hired by a foreign government or for a foreign campaign. That was back in 1985. Ferdinand Marcos, who had been the dictator of the Philippines, where they had not had an election for 20 years. Mr. Manafort went on to do other campaigns or consulting for people like Jonas Savimbi of Angola, Mobutu of the Congo.
Right.
And most recently, in 2010, he was the consultant and advisor to a Ukrainian political party where the candidate there was elected in 2010.
Let me add one more voice to the conversation. Asha Rangappa is an associate dean at Yale Law School. She is also a legal and national security analyst for CNN. She served as an FBI agent specializing in counterintelligence. Asha, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Two acronyms I'd like you to help to define for us that will come up a lot in the course of this conversation, or may. FISA and FARA, F-I-S-A and F-A-R-A. First of all, what is FISA?
So FISA is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. This was an act that was passed in 1978 to set out the procedure that the FBI and Department of Justice have to follow in order to commence electronic surveillance on people, secret electronic surveillance, in order to get foreign intelligence. Prior to that, there was no statute, and it resulted in some abuse by then Hoover's FBI and also the CIA. So this kind of put a check in place. And what it does is it not only sets out these standards, but it creates a secret court called the FISA court, which is rotating federal judges who sit as the judge for this to review FISA applications. So there's a judicial check, and the FBI and DOJ have to submit applications, and these can be reviewed later by Congress to make sure that they're in compliance.
One more term, FARA, F-A-R-A. What is FARA, and how does that apply to Paul Manafort?
So FARA is the Foreign Agent Registration Act, and what FARA does is it requires people who are acting on behalf of foreign interests to register with the State Department. And the idea is to promote transparency so people can essentially evaluate the information that they're getting, knowing that they are acting on behalf of foreign interests.
We're pleased now to be joined by the spokesman for Paul Manafort. Jason Maloney is on the line. Jason, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me, Joshua.
How is Mr. Manafort doing? He's got to be feeling a little bit of this pressure. Where is he these days? What's he up to?
He's doing just fine. And it's certainly been a flurry of activity. We're following it closely. But I think it's a long, long way from being resolved.
Why does your client believe that investigators are so focused on him? What is his take on why he seems to be under such scrutiny?
Well, his take is his take, but the development that occurred earlier this week that CNN unveiled is all you need to know about this case. I mean, what we know about when CNN's story broke about the revelations about not one but two FISA warrants, that made this crystal clear a political story. And I know Paul's feeling is, and I'm delighted to offer my observations, but Paul's feeling is this is entirely politically motivated. Here's what we know as a result of CNN's piece. This, the Obama administration sought to surveil a political opponent, not once, but twice. And not once, but twice, found there was nothing on any conversations worthy of a case. That is significant. The revelation that somebody revealed this fact is huge. Comey himself, James Comey, said in March 2017 that it's a felony to reveal the existence of a FISA warrant.
So then if this was politically motivated under the Obama administration and Donald Trump is president now, why do you think it's happening now?
Well, the second FISA warrant, according to CNN, was put in place in the fall and continued through through early 2017. And again, nothing was found on any of these tapes. Nothing was found on any of these intercepts. And why it's coming to light now is for someone to investigate. Paul Manafort earlier in the week begged, said, please, somebody conduct an investigation. Who revealed the fact that one of the most classified and valuable tools at our intelligence community's disposal, the FISA court, why was this violated? And who's behind it and why? Those are questions that need to be answered.
I hear you on that, although I wonder about Robert Mueller's involvement now. I imagine that if this was purely politically motivated, and Bob Mueller is not a newcomer to federal investigation, that the investigation might not have had such intense energy around your client, such as the FBI raid at his home in Virginia. You don't really think that every single thing that's happened since the Obama administration has been purely political, do you?
I think it remains to be seen, and hopefully the Department of Justice's Inspector General is going to look into it and look into who's behind these leaks. Like, again, Comey said that the point of a FISA court is to protect the identity of U.S. citizens. And it's not lost on reporters I speak with and people who have contacted me that somebody violated this very important tool. That needs to be looked into, and hopefully that will happen. Additionally, Paul said, if you have intercepts, we don't need to worry about every drip that occurs day by day about calls and conversations that may have happened. Please release the transcripts, release the intercepts, let people judge for themselves. He's that confident there's nothing there. And certainly the FBI agreed because no charges were ever brought as a result of these FISA intercepts.
Let me get through some of the reports that have come out. I'd like to get your take on them, and maybe we can hit several of them kind of quickly. There's this Washington Post story from last night that said that Mr. Manafort apparently, allegedly, tried to offer briefings on the presidential race to a Russian billionaire. Can you shed any light on that?
Well, I'll say two things about that. This all comes from the same 20,000 records, the same tranche of materials the campaign recently provided to Congress. And within that same tranche of materials was an exchange where a campaign staffer offered to set up a meeting with Vladimir Putin. And Paul is on those emails. The story was written in early August, clearly rejecting any overture by Russia to set up any sort of face-to-face with Donald Trump.
So you're saying the Washington Post story is untrue?
Not saying the Washington Post story is untrue. What nobody disputes and what is widely known is that Paul was owed money. And I want to be really clear here. He didn't owe money. He was owed money from past clients. And the email exchange, a snippet of this email exchange, simply lays out the fact that he's trying to get his debts paid. I've seen some snippets of emails. The Washington Post didn't actually have the emails themselves, but it's emails from a former colleague, a former employee of his in the Ukraine.
I have to say, Mr. Maloney, I appreciate your goal to try to be clear about this story. Can we be clear about the core detail? Did Mr. Manafort offer briefings on the presidential race to this Russian billionaire? Yeah or no?
Joshua, I'm not even going to get into that, but you know what Paul
okay,
has
then
asked?
We should, then we should move on to something else, because it's a real simple question, and I would really like a direct answer.
It is a real simple question, but let the transcripts of any intercepts be revealed. Release the emails. Let people make up their own minds.
Let me ask you about the Kurdish independence referendum. The New York Times is reporting that Mr. Manafort spent the last few months helping the Kurds with this referendum. The U.S. opposes it out of concern for destabilizing Iraq further. Now, you have told the Times that Mr. Manafort does not discuss his current or future clients. So I don't really want to retread that ground with you, but I wonder what your client's view is on this report. It kind of casts him as a sort of political mercenary.
Joshua, I'm not going to discuss his current work or his future work. If there's anything that he needs to register for FARA for, he will. He'll comply.
Talk about how your client chooses his clients. What are his standards? What are his boundaries? What are his goals?
If you'd like to get into some of the activities in Ukraine, happy to. But his principles are his principles. The man is highly sought after. He's very, very smart. He's been in this business a long, long time, and he knows how to conduct himself. And because of his success that he's enjoyed, certainly with the Trump campaign, people are going to seek him out.
Is this the kind of work that would be outside the bounds for Mr. Manafort, this work with the Kurdish independence referendum?
I'm not going to discuss his current work or his future work.
I'm not asking you to talk about what he's doing. You're his spokesman. You're supposed to be inside this guy's head. I'm trying to get a sense of who this person is, because this perception is building among the American people that Paul Manafort is untoward. And if that's not so, I would like you to help me break that down. Is this the kind? Go ahead.
Paul is going to be delighted to have all the facts come out in the future. I think what should be very, very concerning is that political motivations were behind the FISA warrant, and that Paul was surveilled by political opponents. And you mentioned earlier the search of his home. I mean, these are tactics that are reserved for violent offenders. People should be shocked. Whatever you think of Paul Manafort, whatever anyone's opinion is of him, if you were upset when Valerie Plame's identity was revealed, if you were upset when Chelsea Manning provided sensitive military documents to WikiLeaks, you should be equally disgusted at the treatment of Paul Manafort and the fact that he was surveilled by political opponents.
Or perhaps we would be equally disgusted that Paul Manafort might have helped the Russians to influence the American election. Does that make sense to you?
Paul Manafort did nothing to collude with the Russians to influence the election. He'd be delighted to speak about that. He actually volunteered, was the first to volunteer to go before Congress and discuss this.
Well, then what do you if Mr. Manafort
hold on, Joshua, let me get
no, I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon, Mr. Maloney. This program has one moderator. If Mr. Manafort is so certain, then I wonder what your take is on why all of this smoke seems to be surrounding him. You know, they say where there's smoke, there's fire. And it is entirely possible that your client is innocent of all of this. Innocent until proven guilty. I totally get that. But there are a lot of people who are kind of watching this and just sort of waiting for the final shoe to drop. What are we not hearing about Paul Manafort that might help convince us, you know, rank and file people, that your client really is on the up and up?
Paul Manafort is a proud American, and he served his country both in past elections and for various political candidates throughout our history. He's been in this business for 40 years. He has cooperated from the beginning, volunteering to come to Congress, revealing the June 9th meeting with Donald Trump Jr., providing reams of documents for the investigation, until he got a very, very clear signal he shouldn't cooperate. When federal agents woke him in the morning on the day he was expected to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee, knocked on his bedroom door and roused him and his wife up from their sleep. Now, people are not, you know, necessarily wearing suits in the morning. They were frisked, they were manhandled, and this is shocking.
I'm sorry, Mr. Maloney. My question was, what are we not hearing? What do we not yet know about Paul Manafort that might help us believe that he's really on the up and up? What? Give me something new.
I'm not certain how to answer your question. I think Paul would love to be able to discuss the details you're looking for, but the signals that are being clearly sent from various investigators do not bode well for someone who has tried to cooperate and volunteer information in the past. Tell me how it benefits him that he's provided as much clarity as he possibly can to investigate what did Russia do to undermine our 2016 election.
I don't think it's so much
because
about
we're still not even closer to that answer. That is the question.
Would you convey to Mr. Manafort our invitation to appear on this program and speak for himself?
Delighted to.
We would love to speak to him. And I think, I'm assuming, from your perspective as a spokesman, does he understand why people are so exercised about this? Does he understand the controversy, like why it's existing? Forget about the politics. I mean, everyday people.
I think he understands, and I recognize and acknowledge that there is a tremendous amount of attention, particularly inside Washington, on the details that are unfolding about this event.
Well, I certainly do hope you'll convey the invitation. He is more than welcome to appear on this program anytime. But until then, I appreciate the information you've provided. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you, Joshua.
Mark, what did you hear or not hear from Mr. Maloney?
You know, he did spend a good deal of time casting the CNN story about the supposed FISA warrant, you know, in, as you know, starkly political terms, that it was a political operation against a political opponent of the Obama administration. Now, the Times has not confirmed the CNN report about the FISA warrant. The story said that the original FISA warrant was brought in connection to an investigation to his Ukraine work, and then was not was dropped during his time on the campaign, and then picked up again in the midst of FBI concerns about Russian collusion. So, you know, you could argue one way or the other about its political nature, but there's still a lot more details that need to be learned about this.
Asha, what about you?
Yes, so I want to clarify a bunch of things that were inaccurate.
What rises to the top of the list of what needs clarification?
So let's just go down the list here. FISAs are not meant to collect evidence for criminal charges. So they are for foreign intelligence. You're trying to find out what spies or terrorists are up to. The information that you get is not intended to ever see the inside of a courtroom. So the fact that no criminal charges were brought as a result of the FISA does not mean anything. That actually means that it's working the way it's supposed to. You would get a totally different kind of surveillance, eavesdropping, wiretap warrant under criminal standards, which are much higher if you were going to look for evidence of criminal activity. The second thing I would say is that when you get a FISA on a U.S. person, you actually have to go back to the court every 90 days and demonstrate that you've been getting foreign intelligence as you said that you would be, and then the court will approve another 90 days. So the fact that one FISA stopped is not as meaningful. If you would look at the length of time, if it had been renewed before that at any point or multiple times, mm-hmm. that means that there was foreign intelligence being gained. And the fact that it was stopped just means that that source dried up. In fact, from an intelligence point of view, if that was consistent with him starting to meet with the Russians, then that would make sense. They would probably move him to other channels of communication. So you would stop getting intelligence, and then you would figure out where else they're communicating, and then you would go back up on those channels.
I'm sorry. Let me give Susan Hennessy and Jan a chance to jump in. Susan?
Yeah, so I think there's Mr. Maloney sort of characterized this stuff as crystal clear political motivation, and that's just not true. So we talked about the fact that the U.S. government has obtained not one but two FISA warrants. So in order to obtain a FISA warrant on a U.S. person, and Paul Manafort is a U.S. person, you have to demonstrate to a judge, a federal judge, Article III regular sort of judge, probable cause. The government has to show probable cause that the individual is the agent of a foreign power. The way that's defined underneath the statute, that essentially means the government has to show probable cause that an individual engages in sort of clandestine intelligence gathering for or on behalf of a foreign power, and that that activity does or probably involves the violations of criminal statutes in the United States. So while these are distinct standards from sort of the world of criminal law or ordinary wiretaps, the mere fact that the government was able to show this standard is itself significant. It also occurs in a context that is non-political, right, sort of within the judiciary. Now, Mr. Maloney is certainly right that these are very, very serious leaks. FISA information should be protected not just for sources and methods reasons, but also because, look, it's a civil liberties violation for sort of this information to be leaked, clearly for damaging in order to damage the reputation or raise these questions. Now, that's different. You can condemn the leaks without saying that that's evidence that the fact that this surveillance was undertaken is somehow political.
And Jan?
I think that one of the things that's important here is the timing of this revelation, which occurred in 2014, the FISA warrant. That's 2 years before Paul Manafort started working on the Trump campaign. And that's important for several reasons. One is that it suggests that there are many other reasons why law enforcement may want to investigate Mr. Manafort. Could be his failure to register under FARA. It could be because he received enormous amounts of money, which he may not have paid taxes on. It may be because he had foreign bank accounts. So there's a lot going on here besides Mr. Mueller's investigation.
Plenty of questions to get to as we continue trying to suss out what is going on with Paul Manafort. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Lyft, reminding listeners that they could be relaxing in a Lyft ride right now with their eyes closed, listening to Beethoven or whale sounds or a babbling brook or something else relaxing. Lyft provides rides as relaxing as the buttery smooth voice of a public radio announcer because riding is just a more relaxing way to drive. Lyft, it matters how you get there. Download and ride today.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to 1A. If you're looking for another podcast that'll make you think and laugh at the same time, you might check out the quiz show Ask Me Another. Ophira Eisenberg and the house musician Jonathan Colton play nerdy games with real contestants and celebrity guests. Have you ever wondered how many quills are on the average porcupine? Have you ever heard Patrick Stewart give a dramatic reading of the lyrics of Taylor Swift? Well, you can on NPR's Hour of Puzzles and Word Games and really fun trivia. Check out Ask Me Another now on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts. Back now to our conversation about Paul Manafort with Mark Mazzetti of The New York Times, former FBI agent Asha Rangappa of Yale Law School, Susan Hennessy of the Brookings Institution, and election law expert Jan Barron. Jonathan here in D.C. writes, it's clear Manafort had financial problems. Let's say he was completely 100% compromised. How does his guilt implicate or in any way link Donald Trump? Even if it's a clear case about Manafort's guilt, isn't there a big gap to prove Trump was aware of any of this? Or is it enough to make a case that Trump's team was in Russia's pocket? Asha, I wonder if you could take that question.
Yes. So I'm going to basically break this down into one, two, three in terms of how you go from a counterintelligence investigation to a criminal investigation to possible collusion. Criminal investigation. Step one, what did the Russians do? How did they do it? Step two, did they break any laws doing it? And then step three is who helped them? Now, if Manafort helped the Russians break any laws in attempting to interfere with the election, obviously he has criminal liability. But conspiracy, which is the criminal version of this term that we've been throwing around called collusion, essentially means that anyone who is also in on the agreement and does anything to help it along, even in a small way, and even if they don't know everything that's going on, can also be liable. To answer the question, yes, there is a gap. That's the gap that Mueller would have to fill. And you do have to prove that their knowledge of it. And that is what I think is difficult for Mueller to prove in terms of associations that might have assisted the Russians in any way.
Jan?
Yeah, and I think that's the area where, frankly, we're not getting a whole lot of information of specific links by Mr. Manafort or others with clear violations by the Russians of interfering with our election. We know that they have interfered with our elections, and we know that there was an election going on, and we know that there have been some intersections and at the very least, coincidences. The fact that Mr. Manafort has experience with Russians, although he says not with the Russian government, and that there was that meeting in the Trump headquarters with a Russian lawyer. But that is not evidence of either the illegality or the conspiracy that Asha was referring to. And that's what Mr. Mueller is investigating and trying to determine whether that existed.
Amy in Chevy Chase, Maryland, not far from here, writes, I am a retired white-collar lawyer. No-knock warrants are not reserved for drug kingpins. Courts authorize such warrants because the prosecutors have evidence that the subject would or has destroyed evidence and has lied to investigators. Susan Hennessy, what about that no-knock warrant? The story, the reporting about that warrant is pretty dramatic. They picked the lock and they showed up while they were asleep and they frisked Mr. Manafort's wife to make sure she wasn't armed. What about that? Does the nature of the no-knock warrant or any aspect of this investigation say something to you about how the investigators view Paul Manafort?
All right. So one of sort of the suspicions here is the reason they might execute a warrant in that particular sort of dramatic manner is to rattle him, right? Maybe incentivize cooperation, right? That it's an aggressive strategic or tactical position. But in order to execute a warrant in that manner, they would have had to convince the judge that there were these sorts of risks, right? Of evidence having been at risk of destruction or some other issue. And so that means it's essentially that federal investigators know something about Paul Manafort that we don't, and that they were able to convince a judge that this was the appropriate way to execute that warrant. So it is an indication that there's something else there. What exactly it is, we just don't know.
Mark?
And I just add one other thing to that, which is the timing of the search. It came as Manafort had just testified to one congressional committee, was about to testify to a different congressional committee. And we don't know this, but certainly there is some... You know, Mueller's team has to navigate these different investigations. And if there was any concern about what he might have told that committee, he was about to testify to another. And as Susan said, you know, concern about what he might do in advance of that testimony. I mean, again, I'm speculating here, but it does show that there's a kind of complex minefield here that Mueller's team has to navigate because of the other competing investigations going on.
Jan?
And as Mr. Maloney indicated, Paul Manafort had produced documents to these committees at their request. So in order to have a search warrant, you normally have to demonstrate that notwithstanding what the witness or target had produced, there was evidence that he hadn't been totally forthcoming and that he may have more documents that had been requested in his possession at his home.
Speaking of documents, Internet King wrote on our website, the1a.org, I would like to know the possibility a Trump campaign official leaked the latest Manafort story to the press. If they did, what is the reasoning behind it? Mark, maybe you're the best one to talk about kind of the leaks and the nature. I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but...
Which story?
Exactly. Well, and that's kind of the thing with this whole saga is so much of it has depended on people leaking information or sources telling the New York Times, or it's very cloak and dagger. And I think for the average person... it's kind of hard to know what to make of it all.
Yeah, so will the Times disclose who leaks to it?
I think I know the answer to that one.
Absolutely not.
No.
I mean, we, at the same time, try to be as transparent as we possibly can about sources and up to a point. And, you know, we owe readers as much as possible information about where we get our information. We have to vet the source of information to make sure, you know, for their agendas, et cetera. You're right. There's been a lot of stories, not only on Manafort, there's been a lot of stories this whole year on this investigation. And I mean, there's a lot of different players here. There are any number of different places where information exists that has one or parts of this puzzle. So our job is to vet the information, see if it's newsworthy, and as best as possible, try to tell readers why it's significant and where it fits.
A guy actually has a criticism of part of this whole process, and Asha, maybe you can answer Guy's comment. He wrote, President Trump said that Obama was wiretapping his campaign, and everyone laughed. Now he's been proven to be correct via Paul Manafort. Now James Comey's friend Mueller is continuing to cover up FBI corruption by amping up Manafort prosecution. Asha, what do you think of Guy's comment, particularly this idea that it proved President Trump correct about the wiretapping? I'm not sure that it does, but what do you think?
Well, the president does not order wiretaps. I mean, that's just the bottom line. These go through a court, as Susan Hennessy also mentioned. They are initiated within the FBI as a part of an investigation. There is congressional oversight. There are many audits that are done. There's an independent board called the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board that reviews these kinds of investigations. So it is simply not correct that the president, that Obama could have possibly ordered this wiretap. The kind of conspiracy that the government is actually not efficient enough to have that kind of conspiracy. The second thing is that President Trump was not the target of this FISA. It's simply the case that when there are FISA warrants, people can get picked up. It is entirely possible that a communication between Manafort and President Trump before he became president, or maybe even after the FISA was continuing, could have been picked up. These are called incidental communications. They are necessary for this kind of surveillance because you simply can't understand a conversation if you're only listening to one side of it. Mm-hmm. If it has no foreign intelligence value, it will be discarded. Only if it has foreign intelligence value will it be listened to. So the president is not correct. And, you know, Congress can review all of these and see whether so far there's been nothing to suggest that there was anything corrupt or politically motivated.
And the former director of national intelligence, James Clapper, discussed this when he spoke back in March on NBC's Meet the Press. Listen.
If the FBI, for instance, had a FISA court order of some sort for a surveillance, would that be information you would know or not know?
Yes.
You would be told this.
I would know that.
If there was a FISA court order, yes, on something like this.
Something like this, absolutely.
And at this point, you can't confirm or deny whether that exists?
I can deny it.
That was James Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, speaking to NBC's Chuck Todd on Meet the Press. Jan?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that Mr. Manafort lived in Trump Tower. I think he had his residence there since 2006, maybe 2004. And if there was a wiretap, the question is, well, exactly what was tapped? You know, and there had been prior reporting about servers that were located in Trump Tower that were used by the Trump campaign, presumably by residents as well. So Asha is correct that President Obama did not order the wiretap, but there was a wiretap. It apparently was located in the building where the Trump campaign was operating during the time of the Trump campaign, even before Mr. Manafort was on the campaign.
T writes from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, kind of about the larger implication of this for the Russian investigation. T writes, hypothetically, is there any scenario under which the last presidential election could be invalidated? Susan, maybe you can answer this. I'm skeptical. I think the law provides for a very long line of presidential succession. So if the president and the vice president, let's say, were both found to be complicit, I think it would just go to House Speaker Paul Ryan and then Senate President Pro Tem Orrin Hatch and then Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and so on. Susan, is that right?
So I don't think it's really a question of succession, right? So, recently we've seen, for example, in Kenya that their Supreme Court invalidated the outcome of that election. There are no similar provisions in the United States. Once sort of those final certifications are done, certainly once the president takes the oath of office, we don't have any legal mechanism to invalidate that election. What we do have is the political remedy of impeachment and in some circumstances the 25th Amendment. But absent those two mechanisms or the resignation of a president, no, there is no way to go back in time now and essentially undo the 2016 election.
Patrick tweets, if Manafort is indicted, what evidence will become public and what will be withheld from public view? Asha, could you take that one?
So when they are doing a FISA surveillance, if they come across criminal activity, it can be passed over to the criminal side and it can be introduced. It would be declassified. There's an entire process. I mean, everything in a trial, if Manafort is charged, it's a public trial. He's entitled to that under the Constitution. But I think, you know, they would probably be very careful about anything that was obtained through sensitive methods and sources,
right,
and introducing that, which is probably why Mueller is really trying to get as much as he can through these, you know, through the criminal side, like through the search warrant, and he wants him to talk. If if he can get Manafort to give evidence in his own words, that is really better for Mueller all around.
We are almost out of time for this hour, and I know there are still a lot of questions remaining about Paul Manafort. What is your one biggest question for him? Suppose that Mr. Maloney comes through and we get a chance to talk to Paul Manafort here. What's the one thing you want to make sure we learn from Paul Manafort that we don't yet know? Susan, let me start with you very, very, very briefly. What's your one biggest question for him?
I think the one biggest question was the one that was implicated by that earlier question of help us fill in the gaps. Did he provide access from any of his sort of, you know, Russian contacts, Ukrainian contacts to the president? Sort of what is his knowledge about sort of what the president and his inner circle knew? Okay. Because that is the big area in which we just don't have information and is highly consequential to the United States.
Asha?
My big question is, what did the Russians do? How did they approach you? What was their plan? The biggest threat here is their interference in our democracy, and we need to know exactly what they did and how they did it. And I think Manafort holds the key to that.
Very briefly, Jan?
I'd like to know whether Mr. Manafort paid all his taxes and whether he disclosed any foreign bank accounts that he has.
And Mark?
I'd basically echo Susan's question. It's, there may be things they find that Manafort did that was criminal that may have nothing to do with collusion or last year's election. And we want to know whether there's any linkage.
That's Mark Mazzetti of The New York Times. Mark, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Asha Rangappa of Yale's Law School. Thank you, Asha.
Thank you.
Susan Hennessy of the Brookings Institution. Thank you, Susan.
Thanks for having me.
And Jan Barron of the Election Law Group at Wiley Ryan LLP. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you.
I'm away for the next few days. John Donvan will be filling in. But until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.